When I was living in Japan in the 70s and 80s, people would come up to me and say, "This is a pen." Of course, they were not actually holding pens at the time. They were parroting an English lesson they'd learned in school. Perhaps it was the extent of their English. With my unusual skin, hair, and eye color, surely I was an English speaker. As I was in Japan to teach English, I could hardly complain. And now it's my turn. This is Penn.
But I loved talking to Penn Jillette. As my father would say, you ask him what time it is, he'll tell you how to make a watch. Here's my conversation with Penn Jillette.
I'm as hungry as a mechanical bear. Hey, what's good today, huh?
Oh, I recommend the soup du jour. I had it yesterday and it was delicious.
Oh, no zupa for me. I think you got a house special, maybe, huh?
Oh, yes, we have a Chinese specialty today. Thrice humiliated duck.
No, I tell you what. I'll just have an order of poached watches on a side of clocks.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah, please do. I'm really hungry.
No, you must be with the watch repairman's convention at the hotel.
Oh, you read my badge.
Hello, my name is Wacko Crank.
Yeah, that's my name, too. I didn't realize there are so many cranks in New York. Hey, listen, cousin, why don't you just get me a Swiss movement sandwich and hold the mainspring, huh?
No, that's really silly. How could anyone get started eating watches? That'd be awfully heavy on your stomach.
Yeah, that's right. It'd be a big problem if I was a Weight Watcher. But I'm a watch watcher.
Look, sir, I'm sorry. I haven't got time for jokes.
Oh, have you got a timepiece there, boy chick? There, that looks like you've got a rare antique watch.
Well,
let me take a look at it.
Oh.
I think you've got an old man's watch.
It is an
there.
Old watch. I've never had it appraised.
Hey, look, I was right. It's got the old man's dial.
Oh, is that what that is?
It was made in the old country when everybody was older.
Oh,
I see. You see? See, it magnifies the time. You put it up on the bedpost, you know what time it is.
Yes, I can see
it from here. You know why these little suckers are so rare?
Why?
Well, because the old guys used to drink too much, you know, schnapps on the weekend.
Yes.
You wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and the dragons is coming out of the dresser, and the demons coming out of the chamber pot, wound up on the bedpost is the king of the snakes, and he said, "I kill you, you snake! I kill you before you kill me! I swear!"
Wait, my watch!
No!
Oh, how could you do this? This watch has been in my family for years.
And what's the matter, huh? It's still in the family. It's just ruined.
Now listen here, buddy. This is a restaurant. You either order some food or get out.
I'll do both. All right, let's see. Have you got, an appetizer of about 20 little Austrian wooden birds?
Listen, you order real food, buddy, or I'm going to call the manager.
Are you got any Chinese water clock
soup? Okay, that's it. Hurry!
All right. You got any spring wine?
Yes, monsieur, we do.
Well, I tell you what, I'll spring for half a bottle. It helps me unwind.
Yes, I'll relieve thee of thy watch. That ghost, he took my watch. 'Tis small relief, but quick relief to me. But no relief indeed. So I'll relieve myself against yon rock.
The one thing about magic that has always impressed me, and I use magic in fireside theater, illusions, and things like that.
I think got trouble here. I don't know why. Just people seem to think this is magic. It's just this little chromium switch here. Why you people are so superstitious?
It's the sense of wonder. I'm impressed by the skill of the artist, right? But I'm still, it's like, how do they do that? How many hours and hours and hours of practice?
Well, you know, the thing that I find so interesting is that sense of wonder can be summed up in three words, which is just, I don't know.
Yes.
And I don't know is the scientific revolution.
Hello, what's this? This solution's turning blue. Not quite the solution I expected.
Yes.
All science is built on I don't know. Before Copernicus, there was never anyone that said I don't know. The church knew.
Yep.
The kings knew. The dictators knew. Everybody knew. And then science came along and said, I don't know. And I believe that those three words are the most important words said in humility and said as a way to solve problems. And let's just hope there's all the people in epidemiology and medicine and in climate studies are using that I don't know to just get that little bit more information that maybe we're hinting this way that can help us all out.
I caught on television Fauci, Dr. Fauci speaking, and at the end of this little statement that he made, he said, "Science is truth." What do you think about that?
Well, I think for speaking for a lay audience, science is a description of things that are repeatable.
Correct.
And if that keeps being repeatable, that is a pretty good definition. That's a pretty good definition of truth.
You could say that again. Sorry. And what's really amazing to me is that the more we've pushed the limit, and I mean, in new stuff that we've written in the past year, we've pushed the limit even further. The audience seems to not be less mystified, not less thrilled. Every time we've trusted the audience.
You just come over here and I'll show you something.
Don't you trust her, Porgy. Then she'll want to see yours.
No, Mudhead. She's right. Look!
You see? You see what I found?
My golly, it's him.
They've got the big portrait of Principal Poop that used to hang in the boys' Supreme Court at Morse Science.
Those eyes. Weird.
It's always paid off well for us. And the example I love to use is there's a sophistication that I don't think a lot of people who perform are aware of in the audience. Teller doesn't speak on stage. But after the show, I mean, up until the pandemic, Teller and I always met after the show, anyone who wanted to meet us. We would, you know, pose for a picture or sign something or speak to people. And we would do that in two different places. When you're coming out the theater, the way we're laid out in Vegas, you see Teller first, and then you see me. And you can come up. Now, Teller speaks to everyone after the show. He makes no pretense of not being able to speak or not wanting to. They ask him any question, he answers it. It's just perfectly normal. What's fascinating about that is people who go directly to Teller, and I can see talking to Teller, will then come up to me and say, "I think it's wonderful that Teller never, ever talks."
Atomic Turkey, this fall, on the new television lineup, see a famous scientist reduced to a wimp by his wife, by virtue of the lack of need for atomic bombs. Atomic Wimp, this fall. Chapter 1, the Edmund Teller story.
Teller, Edmund. Atomic Wimp.
But yeah, I made six bombs before dinner. Get out of this house, Turkey. I know what you've been doing.
Only atomic thing about you is your breath.
Get out of here.
What that is telling you is it's telling you that we as audience members, it's not them, it's us, have no problem slapping a proscenium right around an event that we felt and witnessed. We have no problem playing along. So if I say what I'm about to do is a trick, and then I saw my hand off, you'll still scream.
To me, the Fire Sign Theater, in essence, represents the art of put-on carried to the ultimate degree in terms of its theatricality or improvisation. Because I remember that no matter how far out we would carry a premise when we were working on the radio, if we were tied into any phone lines and we could get input from the audience, we discovered that the audience would go way out there with us. As long as they bought the initial premise, we could take them as far into outer space as we wanted to. We could be as outrageous in the ideas and characters we were portraying as we wanted to be, and they believed us. Now, that was both a wonderful and terrifying revelation, because it showed me, at least, and I think you too, David, I can perhaps speak for all of us, it showed us the awesome power of the radio. It showed us the extent to which people were, well, either using drugs or just plain brainwashed, and how they would basically follow any line that you threw them. So a lot of electrician, to me, at least the flip side of the record, the main part of the story, comes out of that kind of thinking and a desire on our part to break the hold of that kind of thinking on the body politic, on the people who make up a nation or a country or a city or a neighborhood, so that they start thinking for themselves and realizing that they basically can appreciate a life of freedom if they choose to live such a life.
And that is something that I think magicians have been for years just underestimating the audience. And also drawing unnecessary battle lines. You know, this is changing so quickly in magic that it's changed since we started this show. But magic was always straight, white, cis males doing magic. And everybody else was excluded. Sometimes very clearly. Not even secretly. The magic circle in London did not allow women in until the mid-90s. I mean, unbelievable. It is the International Brotherhood of Magicians. Mm. But with the internet, and I'll also say with shows like Fool Us, we've pushed very, very hard to open that up.
So something you said earlier is catching me there. You said when people are in the audience, you can tell them this is a trick and they can still be fooled, or they can still get something out of it, or they can still have joy.
Sure.
Can you extrapolate that into our larger society?
Well, both positively and negatively, unfortunately. You know, you can go to a play, you can go to Shakespeare, and a guy can tell you that he's a captain of a ship when you've seen him in a deodorant commercial.
Right.
And and you go right along with it. Have a great time. This is fabulous. But I'm afraid that as we've gotten more and more leisure time, which is wonderful, and have gotten more into the arts, I think we've seen over the past, certainly this century so far, we've seen a really bad slipping into kind of a epistemological hedonism. If it feels good, believe it. And I think that ability to make believe has to be left at the doorway to the arts. And I think there's a lot of fun and many, many much more savvy people than me have written in length about this. And I'm not conversant at all. But in QAnon, we are seeing some massive role-playing game stuff that's spilling into the real world.
Mm.
This is no movie. This is real.
Quick reel.
The last reel of this vintage motion picture, High School Madness. Lot number M-25, black and white, 35 millimeter.
Oh, I see.
Now, who started at $5?
All right,
let's
I guess
go
it was me.
25,
go,
25, 25, 25, 25,
25, 25, 25, 25, 25, 25, 25, 25, 25, 25, 25,
25, what do you mean, they?
You know, them.
Name three.
Well, there's the pooper and you.
Thank you very much.
And me. Hey, whose movie is this? Yeah, it's nobody's now, Mudhead, because I'm getting out.
How are you going to do it, Porge?
I don't know.
How'd you get in here?
Darn, I don't remember.
Well, where were you before?
Here's another item, a lovely miniature executive in a brown tweed suit from a front room office.
I sold out.
So here's your last deal, Miss Kresge. Now, which would you rather do? Hit this Jew over the head with a bag of sugar or beat out that rhythm on a drum? Come on, love.
I'll take the bag.
You mean you're going to trade this 4-foot cube of 18-carat Swiss bullion and the snake knives, Mrs. Preskey, all for that little bag?
Oh, yes, I want the bag.
Well, all right then, open it up.
Oh, why? Why, this is a bag of shit.
But it's really great shit, Mrs. Preskey.
Don't spurt fire like the hosers. No, friends. This one won't take over the house like the high-speed vibrating clocks. So, friends, don't change.
More coffins, Warden?
I think I've seen enough.
Then open up your cells and let go.
Ed aims to please, and so does Louise. So don't hide arms, get sidearms at Ames Guns. 30102 East Rhode Island School of Design Terrace in Ukaipa.
Daddy? Where can I get a good deal in a Christian atmosphere?
It's right here! God Almighty, I'm full of it! But I'm going to let it go. And you've got to let it go. Dear friends, just as sure as you can bet it, one of those two greatest guys up there is going to let go just as you is letting go.
And I remember when I was 17 or 18, I became obsessed with the Marx Brothers and wondered how wonderful would it be if that kind of anarchy, that kind of comedy could spill into the real world.
I don't know what they have to say. It makes no difference anyway. Whatever it is, I'm against it. No matter what it is or who commenced it, I'm against it. Your proposition may be good, but let's have one thing understood. Whatever it is, I'm against it. And even when you've changed it or condensed it, I'm against it. I'm opposed to it. On general principles, I'm opposed to it.
He's opposed to it. In fact, indeed, that he's opposed to it.
For months before my son was born, I used to yell from night till morn, whatever it is, I'm against it. And I've kept yelling since I first commenced it. I'm against it.
And some of the early stuff we did was fairly arch, and that we put the press on too, that we were claiming we were doing something we weren't doing. And it all feels very dangerous and very fun, and like you're pushing the limits. You know, the stuff we see with Borat. It all feels very, very brave. But I've got to tell you, over the past, well, lifetime, adult life, I have grown less and less enamored with that. I have begun to think that the drawing of very, very strong lines is actually more fun. I forgot who it was that said it. Forgive me. Said that the artist must strive to be normal and middle class in day-to-day life and put all the wildness in the art.
Here they come in their hell-beloved gold rush.
The straight people terrifying their own children, living in a world only they can understand.
They'll bug you. They'll bug your mind.
The straight people.
You'll see them in breakfast nooks across the country, smoking cigarettes, drinking martinis, driving two cars.
The straight people.
You'll join them, hanging out at redemption centers, licking glue, making deals with total strangers.
The straight people. You'll be inside their minds as they say.
Anything more from the supermarket, honey?
More sugar!
The straight people. Now playing in patios and parking lots everywhere from Paranoid Pictures.
This movie has been rated X the Unknown. Positively no one admitted.
And I used to think that wasn't really true. I used to think, well, it's kind of nice that Axl Rose is passed out in a hot tub before
the
show.
Yeah, and you're in Vegas where people tend to live their art and party and blah, blah, blah. You know, I get that.
Yeah. But now with the election of Trump out of Celebrity Apprentice, which I was on. On Celebrity Apprentice.
How was that?
And with QAnon. Well, that's exactly the point that I'm making. That's part of what changed my heart. So Donald Trump, who I've known for years, not well, but who I worked with on The Apprentice. Now, The Apprentice is not me trying to get a job from Donald Trump. Right. Every place he could hire me, he took into bankruptcy.
Right.
He has no job to offer me, and I have a job. So we are not in any way, there is no boardroom. There is a television set. Donald Trump does not fire us because we work for NBC. We get our paycheck anyway. Those fees are negotiated in advance. We are doing an improvisational comedy drama theatrical piece that is called reality television. I showed deference to a person that I believed to be a dipshit because that was my job and we were doing improv. Just like when I played the villain on a television show, the protagonist outsmarted me.
Mm.
Not because he outsmarted me.
Because it was written.
Because the script said.
Yeah, right.
He outsmarts me.
Yeah, right.
And on Celebrity Apprentice, Donald Trump is a less successful businessman than I am. He has less money than his father gave him. I have more money than my father gave me. End of competition.
Can I read my poem about Donald Trump?
Go. Do you mean Donald Trump?
It would be meaningful and yet stupid at the same time. I'd be happy to. That's right up my alley.
I thought it was where we are.
Okay.
You're talking about Donald Comeover.
Well,
right?
My opinion of all these guys is they're garden gnomes. Okay.
Garden gnome.
So this is Donald Gnome the First. You can see him. Okay. Of all the garden gnomes we've got, Donald Trump's the lot. You don't have your sound effects box with you.
Thank God.
I've got my head.
Okay, man. Keep going. His pointy hat, he's combed straight back to point up his steely brow. His taste in gold is bold as brass, so gnome of the moment. He's a moment again, right? He's back again?
It's a metaphor, isn't it?
There
the brass
you go.
And the gold. I got
Take
it.
Your bow.
Take it. There you go.
When more cement gets dumped inside the Donald mold, Donald claims the gnomes are pumped to buy, sell, and be sold.
Yeah.
They're fired on with Vegas schemes. I like this rhyme stuff.
This is good. You're good writers.
This is good writing
good writers.
Here.
Buddhists.
They're
Buddhist
fired. Writers. No Buddhists.
Jewish writers? Or is this just Goyish enough?
No, it's Goyish enough.
Okay,
they're fired on with Vegas schemes, Viagra dreams that make their rowboats grow long and sleek.
I did a gig in, it was many years ago, it was about 5 or 6 years ago, I did a gig in Las Vegas, and I'm walking down the strip, and this guy's saying, two girls, $100, $2, $100. And I said, I turned to him, and I looked at him, nobody makes eye contact with these guys, you know. I said, what's the other girl for? Does she take notes? And the guy looks at me for a second, blinks, and says, two girls, $100, $2, $100. I mean, that's just so degrading.
Take notes. That's an interesting idea.
I don't know.
Maybe the other girl is studying for her, you know, sociology.
They're all studying, you know, to go to college. I'm not a whore. I'm not on the pole. I'm just earning enough money to go to business school so I can open another Bunny Mustang Ranch somewhere and know what I'm doing.
Yeah, get that MBA.
Two muscle yachts with lots of busty blondes below.
We should be paid for doing this.
Come on. Don't
no.
you
think? Yes.
I'll pay you for that.
Is it good? Okay. Yeah. I busty blondes.
Busty blondes below.
Yeah, of course.
Alliteration gets them every time.
All right.
Yes. First you skim the stupid out. Gnomes will vote for a familiar face forever. Then gather round the birther gnomes. They'll believe a TV star.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Mm. Even without a birth certificate.
Right.
They'll
now pluck the greedy gamblers up. Some Mormon gnomes mayhap. Then, oops.
This is sounding like Chaucer.
Your ratings done.
I had to read that.
They're falling. The ratings are falling. Crap. But he's back, which is the only reason I'm reading this.
Well, his hair is back.
Yes. Well, his hair is
back. He is back.
He is back.
He's having...
But
read
he's
it
doing
on.
His thing.
No, let's
okay.
not break
Let
the
Let me
flow.
Finish.
We'll
it is like a few more verses. You know, what can I tell you?
A few more verses.
Off those gnomes have gone to look at someone new, because in our house of garden gnomes, they'll find more faithful solid plaster gnomes, red, white, and blue.
Good rhyme.
New and blue?
New and blue. Normally,
good.
You're a lot more...
New and blue
good?
Is a good rhyme?
Well, good for, and wood?
I mean, you're big into feminine rhyming.
Is that the end? Because I'm running out of
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Yes, you are. You're an idiosyncratic feminine rhymist. You know, this is good. This is good. I like
this
that.
This is good. Okay, well, let's finish it then. Is somebody else in this room whistling? Or is it
No, just me. I'm just whistling.
Well, you're on echo.
Yeah, I know, but that's because
depressing.
I'm whistling in my head.
It's depressing. Go.
And now the pointy-hatted garden guys are governors of garden gnomish states and sit on plushy Senate seats, freshly painted, party-ready with their mates. Those cutesy garden gals painted plaster to the core on lawns from Gnome, Alaska, to the plains of Oklahoma.
This is turning me on, man.
Well, I'm glad.
Yeah,
they're
frankly
more seductive, Pete. Much more than you, Don. So thanks a lot for April Fools. Now back to the B-list gnomes you like to push around. You know, a garden gnome on a penthouse lawn. Garden grow.
Ooh.
Of all... This is a chorus.
Oh, there's a chorus.
Of all the garden gnomes we've got, Donald Trump's the lot.
Oh, okay. Is that it?
I've had my moment. That's it. I'm done.
But you learned something. You were saying you learned something about...
Yes. And then I realized that a lot of people were believing that he was a skilled business person and believed that the deference that he was shown on the show was real. And I don't want to blame myself because I'm not that important. There were a lot of people on Celebrity Apprentice, but there was a tiny piece of that respect that Donald Trump got, a tiny, tiny piece that is my fault, right? Because he called me Penn and I called him Mr. Trump.
Yeah.
Just that little thing, which would never happen in the real world. Never. You know, I call you Tom, you call me Penn. Yeah, that's it. You know, but there's this little make-believe. And then I saw that people really liked playing that deeper. The role playing got deeper and deeper. And then I saw it kind of spilling into life. And of course, I'm taking incredibly important cultural and political things and oversimplifying them in a way that's embarrassing. But from my emotional point of view, that kind of spilled into the real world. And I hated it. And all of a sudden, the culpability goes to the prank shows. Because I think that there is something beautiful about going in, sitting down in a theater, and watching Shakespeare on stage within the proscenium, where everybody knows where the line is drawn. I don't think it is my right as a performer to monkey with people in their real lives.
Beautiful is an interesting word there. I was never skeptical about magic. I was never hard on it. I always liked watching it, but I didn't care too much about it as a form. I'm so sorry to tell you. And then one day I watched one of your pieces. It was one of your Inteller's pieces, and I saw someone write about it and then analyze it. And they described it as beautiful. They said, watch it again and think of it as beautiful. And I watched it and I began to see magic as beautiful. Where is the beauty in magic?
Oh, ho, ho, it's magic. You know, never believe it's not so. It's magic. You know, never believe it's not so.
There's so much of it. There's so much of it. Unsophisticated writing about magic always talks about wish fulfillment. And that is nonsense. There's no wish fulfillment in magic. If we really had magical powers, we would get rid of the pandemic.
Now, patient, you have 10 seconds to tell us what you've got and beat the Reaper.
I'm turning yellow. My God, I've got jaundice.
Jaundice it is! Give it in! Symptom six.
We would cure AIDS. We'd get rid of racism. We would not be vanishing a half dollar and making it reappear. It's not about that. It's about the fact that we can get together and play with the beautiful shortcuts that our brain uses to be able to process all the information in the world around us. I mean, there's a wonderful thing in the retention of vision, that if I put a coin in my hand, you'll still see it. After it's gone, you'll still see it for an instant, because there's that tenth of a second where you're doing building blocks in your head and making it up.
Really?
Yes. Yes, because you're a tenth of a second behind, you are not seeing things in the world. You are seeing what you expect to see, and you're filling those things in.
Right, right.
And playing with that in an area where there's no danger is really profound. And something is silly. You know, when you say, if I had real magical powers, this is what I do, the vanish of a half dollar is ludicrous. When I say, isn't it amazing that this is not what's happening in the world? And yes, it's what you, and yet it's what you see. God damn, that's beautiful. Never in magic, or rarely in magic, are we pointing out a mistake in your thinking. We are almost always pointing out a streamlining of your thinking.
Thank you, fellow fools. Today we're going to do a little time traveling on the show, both backwards and forwards, as we review the 35 years that we've been creating comedy together, and sometimes apart, our prospects for finally groping the Grammy after two previously national humiliations, and most exciting of all, in keeping with XM Stalactite Radio's commitment to the future of entertainment, today we are using a new time-compressing invention on the show for the first time ever in an audio medium. It's called the Time Machine, invented by Bill Hendershot, an engineer from San Jose. And at only $93,000 a unit, it's being used to eliminate repeated frames on regular broadcast television shows, thus creating a space in time for more commercial messages.
Sounds good to me.
And by the way, with the time I've already saved by taking out my breathing pauses in this announcement, I can say, vote for the Firesign Theater's Bride of Firesign, now available where Rhino CDs are sold and downloaded. So, on the show today, to create time for valuable announcements like that, we are trimming certain punchlines from jokes you may have already heard, all unnecessary interruptions or overlaps, all subliminal messages, especially those undermining the war on terrorism, and almost everything that Peter Bergman says, since he's saving all his A material for his May appearance at the New Zealand Comedy Festival. The wonderful thing about the time machine is that you will not any change in the quality of your listening experience.
Right on.
The trims are practically invisible, like a really good nip and tuck. So if you notice that we sound brighter, younger, faster, and even funnier, you can thank Bill Henry, Endershot, and me. I'm a stockholder in the company. This has been an edited, compressed editorial for Fools in Space on the XM Comedy Channel. 150 on your dial. Don't you wish everybody did? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Phil. I mean, I am not only impressed, I am compressed.
The fact that you retain that half dollar in your mind when it's in my hand is not a mistake you're making. That is a beautiful streamlining, because except in very few situations, that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
If every time you put down your teacup and you turned away, you said, it's probably not there anymore. Let me check.
Yeah.
You couldn't get through the first 2 minutes of your day. You must have a model in your head of the world around you, and you must only be looking for things that break that model. Otherwise, you don't have the processing power. You just don't. You know, we have in our brains the most processing that, as far as we know, has ever existed anywhere. And it's just not enough to process the amount we want to. So we have to streamline it. And I think that's really beautiful to study that.
So come on, kids. Line up, sign up, and re-enlist today. Because we need more schooling for more students for more science. Hi! Thank you.
This is Side 5. Follow in your book and repeat after me as we learn three new words in Turkish. Towel. Bath. Border. May I see your passport, please?
What you're dealing with in magic is what I believe is one of the most important things a human being can deal with, which is how do we ascertain truth? And there are very few places that you have a discussion of that. Poetry speaks to truth, music speaks to truth, but not in how you determine what's true. Magic is kind of alone, even outside of music and drama, in determining that. When you're watching Shakespeare, the question is not what is real and what's not. In that stage, you can talk about that abstractly, but not concretely. But magic allows you to deal with epistemology playfully. You deal with the biggest taboo in society. There are societies we can find where cannibalism and murder are not taboo, but we can't find a society where lying to your own tribe member is not taboo.
Uh-huh.
It's the deepest taboo you can have, and yet magicians deal with it playfully. So to me, when you say this is real, you've taken the most powerful aspect of your art form and pissed it away. Thrown it away. It's one of the reasons that so much magic is so terrible, is that once you've done something that violates the rules of the universe, you get a certain reaction from the audience. And there can be a temptation to not go any further. With magic, I believe when you say, we know that what we're doing is not true, and you know that as well, but look at the ways this can appear true to you, you have a fascinating, automatically emotional and even political statement you're making. The idea would be, if Carney Trash, like Penn and Teller,
Well, yeah, I mean, if we'd have gone, if we'd gone on with at that level, we would have been, you know, Penn and Teller.
But
today.
It was so expensive do a show like that.
It was also over our heads in the sense that we were turning out a show too much too soon.
Yeah,
the show was bigger than who we were. That's we didn't true. Come up through the clubs.
That's right.
It we went back to the clubs after this.
Right. The Firesign Theater had established an identity, and Procter and Bergman were only half the wits of the Firesign Theater.
That's how we build ourselves.
That's right. And so to step forward and say, let's ride on the success that we've created as partners was it showed us that the Firesign Theater had this bizarre, unique identity, which it still has, which is like, how many of them are you? Yeah. Which is why we've been able to say there's four of us and then the fifth crazy guy.
Can distort what you're believing here in this theater in real time. What can malicious people with unlimited budgets hiding behind the scenes do?
Thank you.
did not meet you till show three or show four when you finally saw
me.
There was one show that I did performance art at. You were doing a show that started at 8 in the evening.
Uh-huh.
And at 9 in the morning, I went to the ticket booth and stood in line with my friend. And the ticket people said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, my friends who are going to see the Stones and the Grateful Dead, they have to show up 12 hours before the show to get in line. And I like Procter & Bergman as much as they like the Stones, so I'm going to stand here in line." So you came in for sound check, and there was a line of two people that had been there for 5 hours, standing in line, comfortably waiting. We already had our tickets. So we were just waiting in line as performance art. And that led to you saying, "Well, why don't you talk to us after the show?" And you were the first person. Well, that's not true. The first person I met in show business was me. And then the second person I met in show business, I think, was you. I was just amazed that someone who had actually been on stage was going to talk to me.
When Peter Bergman died, Penn Jillette posted on Peter's memorial Facebook page the story of his first meeting with Procter. It was the dawn of Penn's career, so he asked Procter for some advice. Phil told him, "Learn everything." A few years later, Phil Austin died, and Penn posted the same story to Austin's memorial page. I replied to Penn's post, asking him what he would say when Phil Procter dies. Penn answered me, "Phil Proctor can't die.
Give me immortality or give me death. That's the motto here at Ralph's Ball Sports, new and used body shop in the city of the future. Hi, friend, Ralph's Ball Sport here to tell you that everybody must die, but you don't have to be there when it happens. That's why we're having a great going out of body sale. Yes, you can live forever while your friends fall apart around you like rotten fruit. And here's how. Lease an organ or limb from our headless body farm. It's made in America from Americans. Enter the new century with these exclusive clone-ons. Napvalor designer jeans, deluxe follicle hair mat grafting with upgraded media-sensitive stimulated wrapper filler, rear rolled, non-glossy, carbon-intensified, glue guards, power moons, and tinted tint grill spoilers in slash dash or faux flannel. So come on down to Ralph's Ball Sports, City of the Future, and do it today, because there may not be a tomorrow.